PodNuts wants to thank everyone who supports the network by going to www.podnuts.com/Amazon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geeksters episode 149. This is a show where we talk about all things geeky. You know, if it's got a computer in it, at some point we're going to talk about it. My name is Martin Abando. I'm one of the hosts here. I'm coming at you live from a balmy 60 degrees just outside of Portland, Oregon. It's sunny. My son mowed the yard today. Slight breeze. I just want to brag.
Mowed the yard in February.
It was back at my hometown where it's a coastal town. Northern California, so it's not like, you know, it's not like San Luis Obispo, California. This is Northern California. It might as well be in Oregon. 72 degrees over the weekend.
Wow. What was it, Tim? I mean, I had minus one this morning in my car.
Martin, you're a dirtbag.
I know, Tim, you had at least that, if not worse.
I had five below.
Wow.
Yeah. That's cold, like beyond cold.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's just completely dehumanizing. I mean, you think the delta between 32 and 7 below is, I mean, what 32 is 39, so you're 40. I mean, if you went the other way up, you know, up thermometer, you know, the delta is, I can't do the math all of a sudden, but 40. So it's like, I mean, it'd be over 60 degrees. And you think about the difference between that and the freezing point, well, it's huge. And then you think, well, we've dropped that much more, and it's you find a whole host of new things that don't work when it gets that cold.
Yeah,
like batteries and cars.
Yeah, things you count on that I don't want to get into it all, but it's, you know, that's just the nature of things here. And there's people that I know in this world that's not an unusual temperature, and I sound like some crybaby Floridian when it gets down to below 60. So I'm not going to carry on, but that's, but when it gets, you know what I mean? But when, mm-hmm. when it gets, it's just so unusual. It's so out of the ordinary. And you know, thank goodness it's just a normal day. Everybody went about their business and everybody's home safely, and we'll go back to it again tomorrow.
Well, we got Reed in the chat room saying it's 65 in Florida. Highlander says it's 10. I'm showing 60. We're all over the place.
And I'm not complaining. You know what? Because it's like, I hate it like this, but I mean, I don't like the extremes, but it's okay. I do like the change of seasons, and if you love Florida, I'm glad you're there, but don't try and sell me on these awful places that get a gazillion degrees. You hear about how great it is in the winter, but it's just, it's like in the summer, it's brutal, and the humidity and the bugs. I'm glad you stay there and you enjoy it. I'm fine where I'm at. I just have
5 years from now, if Geeksters is still going on, I'll be in Florida. I go, hey, how you doing? It's pretty warm down here. About 5 years from now, if I'm still kicking, I'll be in Florida maybe.
Well, you guys can always come check out the Pacific Northwest.
Okay. I do online.
Out there. Nice. Well, pictures. Yeah, you gotta get around that. We gotta create, oh my gosh, don't even get me started. Well, you know, our governor was our governor's not a very nice guy. And
okay, I'm not familiar.
Okay, so if you haven't watched the news lately, the governor of Oregon, this is his fourth term. I remember him when I was a kid being a governor, and because he governed, and then he did like two terms and then was gone for a while and then came back. And he had his fiance, kind of, they were able to do some illegal activity, and she got contracts and stuff like that because she worked for the governor's office.
Nice.
And,
yeah.
And he pretty much, there's no rule that you can impeach the governor in Oregon. So everybody nice. Just said, you have to go. And he's like, no, I'm not going. I'm not going anywhere. And he's like, you got to go. Nope, I'm not going. I'm doing what the people asked me to do. And so Wednesday, he's stepping down.
Is he Republican or?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Now, Oregon will now have the first bisexual governor.
The new one?
Yeah, the new one.
Because
it's a second Secretary of State that moves up.
Hmm. Wow.
So
anyway,
yeah,
let's talk tech.
It's kind of goofy. It's kind of goofy up here in the Pacific Northwest.
I'm tired with this 50 Shades of Governors or whatever. Yeah, let's talk tech.
Let's talk tech. All right. So what have you guys been working on?
Well, I'm a sucker for a good deal. I think I am. And always look at the circlers on Sunday. You know, Best Buy and Staples.
Sure.
So Staples, they had a Dell i5 for $400, 8 gigabytes of RAM. And I like to have something upstairs because, believe it or not, I mean, I got three decent PCs down here, i3 and i5 and i7, but I use it for this. Mostly I use two of them. I don't necessarily use three, but I have in the past, and if we ever do any more podcasts. But anyway, I'm using a Core 2 Duo laptop upstairs, MSI, and it's just getting, I've had it for 7 years. It's just getting, you know, I mean, it runs fine, but it's just getting old, right? And so I tried to bring up, I had an old Core 2 Quad, and that's just as, that was just as bad. So they also have, Staples also had a Toshiba i7 laptop with 12 gigs for like $550, and that's a really good price too. And I was looking at that, but the i5 was their better deal, and for $400. And it, so I have that upstairs hooked up to my my TV upstairs, and this TV room where I'm doing all my music up there and right now. And so I bought another computer, like I don't have enough, and but it works really well. Yeah.
Is this the Dell Inspiron 660?
I think it is. I think it's what
I've
it is.
I've deployed those before, and they're solid little machines.
Yeah, it's got, so I was looking at, I don't know what motherboard's in there, but I ran a CPU-Z, and it told me the, it's got Micron in there, which is crucial. That's good RAM.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it has a power supply that I can, you know, a lot of those power supplies, they have these proprietary, this one's not. I could put a good one, real heavy one in there for money.
Yeah.
So,
It came with 8.1? Windows 8.1?
8.1. Had a few updates to get. No crapware on there whatsoever. Except for some of the Dell stuff.
And that's normal.
Yeah, right. It's got that backup thing, and there's no way to stop. I can kill it, but I can't stop it right now.
The one thing you want to do on that Dell, though, is, and it's just because I've got Dells all over the place here, is that go into that backup thing and make yourself your set of recovery.
I did it already.
You did?
Yeah.
Perfect. That's the one thing I do, because I'll be deploying like 15 laptops, and they're all the same. I'll make a set of recovery CDs.
Well,
that way I can go back if I
they need had to. Like they didn't have it on display, but they had it in boxes, and on top of it it said you need a flash drive to do recovery, which you don't. They say you need a 32 gigabyte, so I said I bought it because it was on sale anyway. It was like $12 for the 30, and so I'm getting ready to do it. It said I need 9 gigs, so I have plenty of 16 gigs around, you know, right. What I mean, so but I used it anyway. I bought it, so I used it anyway.
No, I'm looking at their website. Yeah, it's an Inspiron 660 i5 64-bit, 8 gigs of RAM, a terabyte hard drive, Windows 8.1, mm-hmm. for $399.
And I think it's wrong. It said third generation CPU. It's the fourth. It's a Haswell. It is.
I mean, that's a good deal. It's tempting, if I had the money to get one of these, and just because I need another server to, you know, replace the server box. Mm-hmm. It's a little overkill for a Pixieboot server. But
yeah. Oh, no. I'm getting five of them for Pixieboot servers.
A Pixieboot raid.
Normally, I would build something for myself, but I'm at that age. I don't game. You know, I don't have to have any high. Like Dave, what David built is almost $2,000. He's got like 32 gigabytes of memory in his. I mean, his motherboard is like 350 alone.
Right. I used to do that too.
I don't
have that much memory.
What was that?
But for $399, I mean, and you get the year warranty with it.
Right.
You know, parts and labor next business day. It's a great little box. I mean, this is kind of what I've been deploying out to my new clients who are just like, hey, we just need some boxes. I'm like, here you go. Well, you know?
Man.
So I put the link in the show notes, but that's a great, hopefully, I don't know how long it's going to last, but that's a
this week, it's going to be on sale. Well, actually, they had it last week for $450. I was going to get it last week, and I kept on hemming and hawing, and then just by chance, they had it on at this big sale this week. So it's going to be on sale till at least till Saturday.
Oh, the 21st, it says. So yes, so Saturday.
Yeah.
So you have it upstairs connected to your television, is that right?
Yeah, I have my I still have my MSI. Well, I had that connected to the TV too. Actually, I can still connect it. I think I got an open port on the TV. But it's just, you know, like if I was in a hangout, I couldn't do anything else if I was on that. But I'm hopefully the i5 and get a little bit more.
Well, I mean, how do you operate it if it's hooked to television? I mean, you have a wireless keyboard or remote? No, what are you doing with it?
It's HDMI.
But I mean, how do you interface with it? Do you have a wireless keyboard or?
I do have that, but it came with a keyboard and mouse and everything.
So the distance between the TV and the computer and you're all within range. It's not like you have the TV or the computer just tucked underneath the television in a stand and you're.
It's a small room. It's a spare bedroom. Oh, okay. Everything's there. You. I mean, I got a. It's a 12 foot HDMI, or 6 foot actually, HDMI cable. So it's not real far from it.
I got it. I was picturing something a little different. Well, yeah. That sounds pretty fantastic.
But they do have those. I do see those wireless ones too that you can get now with HDMI. So you don't have to connect it. If you're on a network, I think I did see something somewhere where you can connect it up wirelessly to a TV.
Okay.
I forgot what that device is called, because I thought it was a, what is this? I'm looking, oh, it's wireless. But no, it's just HDMI. And I like because it's, you know, HDMI does video and sound, and you don't have to worry about any of that. So it's nice. And like, so I'm using it for, like, I'm doing my music upstairs right now. If I'm trying to pick out a song, trying to, you know, and just when I come down here, which is ideal, but it's so cold down here. It takes a while for it to get warm, as you know. And it's just convenient. You know, just I don't have to come down here. And
No, I got it. Well, that's fantastic. And, you know, it's another example of getting a built box home, you know, for less than it would cost to build.
Yeah, I don't think I could. You know, really, I don't think I could build it for $400, maybe. You know, I was pricing one out, and but I was using the i7. I mean, I was using kind of high-end stuff, and with an i7, that was going to be over a grand, but I didn't need all that good stuff in there.
There's compelling reasons to build your own, but
I mean, I've done
for
20.
For most cases, price is not one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably done 20 or so, between 20 and 30, you know, since I got into it. But it's just, I don't need to do it anymore. Whatever.
And I mean, I've had new techs talk to me, or you know, people who have done it right along with me or something like that. And they're always talking about, should I build or should I buy? I said, is this your first computer? They said, yes. I said, build.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's fun. I remember.
Every tech should at least build a couple computers. Yeah. Because then you know what you're looking at, you know what you're talking about. You know, when somebody, because if you've never built a computer and they say, we need to replace the memory, and you look at the side of this box, it has all these things, what, you know.
Yeah, it's good. I mean,
I agree 100%.
You're going to pick what parts you want in it. So you're going to control that. That's right. The beauty of it. And but then, you know, suppose something goes wrong. I had I bought a Gigabyte board. This is back in the, I used to do a lot of AMDs early on. And so it was an Enforce board, Enforce 2, whatever it was. And they used to have these local computer shows until Micro Center came around the area. Anyway, so I would go there, and there was this outfit at
my first computer.
What's that?
Computer show. I bought my first computer at a computer show.
Well, they had this outfit out of Ohio, and so I bought a motherboard and case, and I let them put the motherboard in. Normally, I would do it, right? So I get it home, so I put everything in there, and Windows installed real fast, and then I installed a USB whatever, and it cut out on me. I said, what the heck? And it started back up, and I'm thinking they had the header hooked up wrong, USB header, and I'm redoing it. Anyway, it never started back up after that. And so it cost me like $100 to ship it to them, and they gave me my money back, but I had to pay for shipping. So that was a little bad thing. But in hindsight, I think I know what I did wrong. Don't assemble a computer and test it out while you're sitting on a carpet. I'm trying to blame them, and I think it was me. Now,
scrub your feet, trying to keep them warm.
Yeah, years later, and I was shortening.
Come here, dog.
Yeah, I don't think it was hooked up wrong. I think I probably hooked it up wrong after that. But,
I'm sure the statute of limitations is over, so.
No, it was like 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I guess. 10 years ago.
Well, Mitch, there goes that refund.
Yeah, that reminds me of a hilarious story that a buddy of mine was telling me. He said that he had a friend that he worked at Sony, and what they did is they processed warranty items as they came in. So, you know, it wasn't like, it was kind of like what Mitch had here. It wasn't like, it came in for service or repairs. I mean, these are things that have been like destroyed, and they were wanting their warranty honored. And this item in particular was a camcorder. And so, and the guy, you know, the guy sent it in for it, he wanted it replaced or his money back or whatever. But he just said, it doesn't work anymore. It just stopped. One day it just stopped, which wasn't entirely not untrue. But of course, you know, this guy's telling the story that the tape was still in it, the cassette was still in it. So they retrieve the cassette, and as they're watching it, like the last few seconds of it, is you see a pool coming toward you,
and like then water,
yeah, and then splash, and then nothing. So, you know, I mean, the man had actually like recorded his own evidence against him, you know. So I understand he was not, I don't think that was warranted so much, but is that funny? Cracks me up. Let that be a lesson to you. If you're going to send something in, remove the evidence.
That's right. Mitch, you had mentioned that you had built, and he went away. I'm not sure if he fell off.
I'm here.
Okay.
My leg fell asleep. I'm trying to get, I got cramps.
All right, well, I'll talk and you can answer. Well, I'll just throw it out there. You know, you had mentioned in the past you had built a lot of AMDs and with AMD processors. And I remember building a lot of computers with AMD processors, and that was kind of my go-to. And since then, I've really switched a lot over to Intel. I was working on an AMD computer the other day, kind of over a long period of days, and it just was so slow. It was a Dell laptop, but it was an AMD processor, and I just felt like the performance just took a huge hit.
Well, see, it wasn't always like that. At one time, back in the days, I think, back in the day, AMD was faster than Intel, and they were a lot cheaper, but then Intel, they woke up and they started getting competitive, lowering their prices. It doesn't pay to get a AMD because now, I mean, they're so much far ahead of Intel, so much far ahead than AMD these days.
Intel fell asleep and they, AMD showed up and they,
imagine Mitch's one leg is Intel and the other leg is AMD.
Okay. So one leg like shows up, it's smaller, it's faster, it's cheap. No, but you know, AMD showed up at the right place at the right time, and they had the right new processor, and it was fast, it was cheap, it was energy efficient, and they continued to build on that line. And you know, it was amazing. I mean, they were like the giant killer, and everybody was just when AMD, all the builders, and it was a really special time with the processors. And just when you thought that Intel was about dead, you know, here came the dual core processors. And the Intel, they woke up and they really had something special up their sleeve. And once the dual core processors came out, it was lights out. I mean, they were gone.
Yeah.
Almost broke my camera. Oh my god!
Sorry, Mitch dropped his camera and everybody. It's kind of had to tilt my head sideways to kind of figure out what was going on.
All right, I think I'm good. I switched chairs.
As I recall, a lot of the research done for the dual core processors was, I believe it was in Israel. I know that the first, I think I have a laptop here with the first, the first dual core chips that had a codename Yona, but I think that a lot of it was done in a small lab in Israel, as I recall. So if that's true, it seems to me like that would be a pretty good little spot to hide out your research.
It's a pretty holy CPU, I'd say.
I know I was trying to build upon that, but
okay.
No, the codename Yona is
Star Wars. That's Yoda. That's, no, never mind. I'm sorry.
Not Yoda.
I'm sorry. I'm getting mixed up.
Yona. Anyway, anywho. So yeah, that was a pretty cool time because it was, you know, for the longest time it was just Intel snooze, and then this little guy showed up, just kind of clobbered him, and I don't know what. Competition was good because here came the dual cores, and you know what that competition spawned has been pretty fantastic for us. It's been amazing processors that run extremely well and are very, very inexpensive for what they do.
Mm-hmm. But I remember building those Bartons, and they're decent CPUs back in the day with those N4s boards, because I probably did like four or five of those. But now I'm all Intel now, all Intel.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I don't have an AMD in the house out of my 7 or 8 PCs I have in here. Anyway, anybody want to buy a Core 2 Duo MSI laptop or a Core 2 Quad Intel desktop?
You make a Pixie Boot server out of it.
You'll have to log in and do it for me.
I know of a podcast you can go listen to. I think it's Geeksters episode 147.
I think I was I there?
You sleep?
Yeah.
Were you sleeping?
I was there.
Hope you were there.
Martin. What have you been working on, man?
Oh, well, you know, okay, so I got this. This is an interesting thought that I need to figure out. I need to figure out how to fix this problem. So since I work at a couple apartment complexes, and we're using OpenDNS currently to block them, and that works out really well when there's almost two separate circuits. And the reason is because we'll have the public, you know, people who just come in and use like the business center, go out on one circuit, and we can put OpenDNS on that, and they get completely blocked because there's a computer. And with OpenDNS, you have to figure out some way to get your external IP address to them if you don't have a static IP, okay?
Right.
Or if there is a public computer but we're running off another router, then I will just put the OpenDNS on the first hop computer. That's usually kind of in the office. And then OpenDNS kind of filters now just not the public, but also the with the office, which is good. And then everything just kind of gets filtered together. So now I run into this issue where last week I was called to for an issue where the office at three apartment complexes, these are not necessarily apartment complexes as much as they are kind of townhouses. They're apartments, but they're like condos. So they're high rises. They have a commons room in them. It's not a business center, but the commons room has a wireless, has a TV, a fridge.
Sure.
You know, so you can rent it out for a Super Bowl party or whatnot. So what happened is, but it does not have a computer. It's just the wireless. So what's happening is we're providing OpenDNS, or we're using OpenDNS in the business sections, but we need to figure out how to filter content through the commons area.
For the public use.
So the problem that I'm working on processing this, and I almost have it all figured out. The problem we're running into is, one, there's not a computer there, so we can't put an OpenDNS updater on something, so the dynamic IP address gets updated by OpenDNS. And two, it's a dynamic IP address. So we have to figure out how to make it a static IP address, and pretty much that came down to we're just going to have to get them a static IP address. There's no way to do anything else because OpenDNS does not accept names. So it's not like I could go to something like NoIP, log into the router, put the NoIP information in the router, and then say, oh, to get that IP address, you just go to, you know, portland.noip.org.
I didn't think about that.
So you have to pay for that, right? A static IP, right?
Yeah, we'll have to pay for it. But those DNS host resolution names, which would be great if I needed to get to it from the external, those are free.
Right.
But OpenDNS won't take, you know, public place.opendns.org. They need an IP address. So we're gonna have to get a static IP address. So that solves that issue. Okay. And I called OpenDNS and I said, this is the issue I'm running into. And I'd like to be able to take all of these little places and have one big dashboard for all of them. And luckily enough, I'm used to this because we do this with the school. So they quoted me about $4,000 a year for all of these sites. And OpenDNS doesn't care about users. They care about access points, which I don't understand that because they're not really, because I asked them, do you care about access points or do you care about external facing access points? Because, you know, if you have your CenturyLink access point, you know, your first hop, and then you have seven access points with all different IP addresses inside of those, do they care about those? I don't know. So I gave them the external facing access points, and it came out to about $4,000 a year for all the sites. And that's going to be somewhere between 15 to 18 access points. So that's basically 15 to 18 circuits. Okay. Which is not bad, and unlimited amount of data and unlimited amount of users after that. So I can content filter everything and for that one cost. And then it's going to turn out to be about $5 per month from CenturyLink to change three sites, $5 each to change those three sites into static IP addresses. So I got the static IP address part. I've got the OpenDNS part done. Now the problem is with OpenDNS, right, how you do content filtering with OpenDNS is you point your external facing DNS to OpenDNS, right? So when you request google.com, it asks, what's google.com? OpenDNS says, are you allowed to get to google.com based on your external IP address? Yes, no. If yes, it allows you through. If no, you get the block page. Well, it's not foolproof because all you have to do is change your DNS on your local machine. And now you can get around. Now you're not asking your router, which is then asking OpenDNS. Right. You're asking Google, what's xxx.com, and it bypasses the whole thing. So how do you fix that?
Standard user?
Pardon me?
Would a standard user fix it?
It's the public. What are you going to do?
Right. There's no computer, so I'm not. If there was a computer on the site, I'd lock it down. Done. Mm-hmm. But I can't lock everybody's phone down. Everybody's iPad, everybody's tablet, everybody's laptop that comes in and use that commons area.
Oh, yeah.
But you would if you could.
Oh, I totally would if I could. Well, that's my job. Well, because the problem...
No, it's your desire.
Well, okay. It's my desire. Because what's happening is...
You'll be the first content filtering governor of Oregon.
because the owners are getting takedown notices.
No, absolutely, I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, that's
exactly. How would you fix that?
Well, so this is now this that, is
that's exactly next, right.
Right, so this is the next step that I'm working on, and I'm going to ask you guys, Mitch and Tim, and the public and people listening, I need your help with this because I need to figure out how to do this cheaply. What you do is you say you block all TCP/IP or TCP and UDP routes on port 53, which is DNS. You block all of that in and out on port 53, except for only the IP addresses for OpenDNS.
I got you.
So now, even if I change my local machine to 4.2.2.6, which is Verizon, and I try to bypass OpenDNS, it's going to say, nope, you can't do that because you can only ask for DNS queries on port 53 to these IP addresses. So I know how I have solutions how to fix it. I just got to figure out how to connect them, because to allow block and deny, or to allow and block on routers takes a more advanced router than just the CenturyLink router.
Mm.
So I'm going to have to put another router in place. This is where I need help with. I need a router that may or may not have wireless. If it does, that'd be great, because I'll just shut all of CenturyLink down. That will allow me to block ports. You can't do it with CenturyLink. You can't do it with TP-Link, my TP-Links. My VPN router down here in my house doesn't do it, because I would try.
This would do it.
So that would do it. Right. And we may have to go, and he's showing me a Fortinet. So I may have to go with some kind of a firewall device on each one of those.
Yeah, it's up David's alley. I'm sure he would know.
You know, but I need to keep this cheap because it's going to go. I'm asking my customers now to pay for these things. You know, I've deployed
you
a
need
WatchGuard.
To keep it inexpensive.
Right. I've deployed. I've deployed WatchGuard firewalls before, but those are like $400, $500 devices. I don't think these people need that. If I could figure out a way to do it on a router, maybe I'll have to get a little PIX ASA, or they're not called PIXs, but a Cisco ASA or something like that. So this is where my problem is that I can do a static check. I can get OpenDNS to look for where we need to do, and I can put it all under one umbrella. Check. The third thing is I need to be able to block DNS queries on port 53 and allow certain IP addresses only through port 53. That's where I need help.
How to write the rule and where you can implement it.
Right. I mean, if they had a computer, I mean, even if they had a computer on site, I could, you know, I could, that still wouldn't be, it still wouldn't work. So I'm going to, that's kind of what I'm working on, and trying to figure out how to do that on an inexpensive scale without having to go to them and say, well, this is going to cost you $4,000 for this. It's going to cost you $5 for this per month. And it's going to cost you $300 per site for this device.
Yeah, he was
they may just say, never mind, pull the plug, you know, no wire. If you want to surf stuff, that's going to cause us takedown notices, you know, leave the commons room and go to your own apartment, which is in the same building.
David was in last week. He's not in there now. He probably have an answer.
So that's kind of the big thing I've been trying to work on is,
that's a puzzle with a solution.
There's always a solution out there. I need an inexpensive,
reasonable solution. And you're trying to, I mean, you could throw any amount of money at something to fix it, but I mean, this is something that has, this is a choose your own adventure, and you want to get to the end of the book where it's like everybody's happy. It cost a reasonable amount of money. It was reasonably speaking the best solution available. And so, you know, it's throw it out to the crowd. These people rule. They'll definitely plug you in.
Right.
I mean, it's an issue. It's a real issue.
Yeah, podnest.com/Amazon, Cisco ASAs, 270, you know, and I'm just looking at Amazon. So you had a Fortinet for IT.
Yeah, it's an old one, 60.
No, I don't know how old that one is, but this one, this is a newer one, $458, you know.
What about those ones that you can build your own?
Well, I'd have to put a box there. We'd have to harden box. And that was another idea was, okay, this is another idea. I need then a small box that has two NIC cards in it.
Right.
Because I possibly need to go in and out, and something then like Untangle or
yeah.
What's the other one that's Astaro.
Okay.
You know, those can all run on a small box. I just need a box that has two network cards that I can maybe attach to a wall or attach to the back of a TV or, you know.
Above a ceiling tile, maybe.
I got that two-core
tube. Yeah. Some are safe and accessible.
Is that if I put a box there, people are going to get into it.
Mm. I'll say, well, I got that core two quad.
After it's gone.
Right.
The core two quad would do it that I have upstairs, but it's big.
That is true. That would do it. But I need three of them.
You do need three of them. Mm.
So that's a kind of a reaching out to the community, figuring out what need some ideas.
I'm picturing a Raspberry Pi.
You need to post this on Google Plus too.
I thought about that. I thought about definitely doing a Raspberry Pi because the new one, I mean, Raspberry Pi with like Dan's Guardian on it would possibly suffice. But I would need to figure out, will Dan's Guardian work on a Raspberry Pi, and will Dan's Guardian do, because Dan's Guardian is for content filtering. Which, if we're going to do that, then we'll just content filter in-house.
Right. See, I'm not familiar with this. I actually just kind of, I threw that out. Really kind of more the other end of the spectrum of
devices
trying to solve this issue. But that's, give me 30 seconds on Dan's Guardian. Sounds awesome.
Yeah. We've used it before in the schools. It fails open, though. That's the problem. If there's ever an issue with it, it fails open.
Oh, well, that's no good.
Right. and that's
there's a problem. Here's your porn.
Right, and that's the reason why we at the schools.
Oh man. Okay, I understand. That's an issue.
You know, at the school, what we did is we had Dan's Guardian, and then if that ever failed open, when it fails, then OpenDNS would take over and become the content filter. Mm. And by that time, we would say, wait a minute, we're noticing there's something, you know, we're noticing these switches or you know, these boxes have gone down. Let's figure out what's going on. So,
gotcha.
I mean, they may have changed. So if somebody out there is using Dan's Guardian, you know, there's a lot of things we could do in-house filtering. I don't know if they want to do that because we need to protect those. You know, Mark Cockrell in the Everyday Linux, they were talking about, he's got his Boris box that he talks about, and it's just a content filter in-house with an old laptop. We could do something like that.
But, that's the thing, is that if you're trying to stay away from a piece of hardware on site, then that was like the whole discussion that we just had prior to a few minutes ago. If you're willing to go to the piece of hardware on site, well, that obviously changes the conversation drastically.
Right, and that's only one piece of hardware on site at one location. What about the other 18 locations? You know, right. Now we're going to have to put a piece of hardware on site there. So the simplest thing would be to do OpenDNS, so that way I can manage and monitor all 18 sites under one dashboard.
Yeah, you know, that you're starting to sell me on that, because that sounds like a lot of money. But when you start talking about numbers like that, 18 sites, 20 sites, it's only going to grow.
And this is for,
I don't know. I mean, anything that you can pay a little bit of money to, I don't know. You gave a big number, but I mean, across the board over time, if you could pay a few bucks to move your management of everything that you're responsible for to your desk, you know, it's going to be worth it.
Yeah, well, I mean, $4,000 divided by 18 sites is $222 and change a year. Divided by 12, that's $18.50 a month.
Right.
You know, per site. And now OpenDNS is free for you, for personal use. You guys can get OpenDNS. I mean, I use OpenDNS, but this is the big dashboard monitoring whole thing. And you know what the other thing about OpenDNS that I really like, since you're going through them for all your content filtering, is they block a lot of the malware and spyware. So when you have a user who tries to go get, you know, goes to a site, but that site's infected, they may still be able to get to the site, but the infected scripts won't run. I mean, they were one of the first people to block CryptoLocker.
Gotcha. No. Look, I mean, 18 bucks a month per site to solve takedown notices. I mean, that alone seems to me like it would almost be worth. But I mean, there's a lot of like that cuts the head off a lot of other snakes too. I don't know. I'm not one to spend money quickly, but I see a lot of value here. Yeah. Anyway, we can leave it good.
And the sites that have stuff. You know, if this company wants to say, okay, let's make these three sites with these three open things that we're having issues with, let's put some kind of a Fortinet or ASA or something like that router in there that does block the DNS. Good. Now the other sites, you know, let's just monitor them. Let's just manage and maintain them. We're not going to really reroute all their traffic and do the whole content filter on port 53. So what could happen here is we could very well just say, let's just, you know, let's leave out the ASAs and let's just, so we could make this work without that ASA, without locking down port 53. That just makes it so people can't go around it. We could still create a static IP address, create the open DNS, and do it, and that if people are going to get around it, people are going to get around it, but we'll do the best that we possibly can to keep, you know, to keep people from surfing sites that my clients are getting takedown notices for. So the extra little effort for blocking that port 53 is what will allow them to say, well, there is no way that you can, you know, you can go around the DNS. Because one of the thoughts was my little, the little open mesh devices that I've been deploying to a couple of my clients.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't do that kind of filtering either. I can point it to OpenDNS, and talking to the rep at OpenDNS, the other thing I did ask him was, are you guys by any chance in the works at all for some kind of tablet? Because he kept saying,
some Android based.
They don't have it. No, I said, I know you have this. He's like, well, you just get the OpenDNS updater and it runs on the computer and it gives us your dynamic IP. I said, that's great. What happens if you don't have a computer? And he goes, what do you mean? I said, I have three coffee shops, almost four now, where all they do is they have point of sale systems that are iPads. Now we are pushing their data through OpenDNS, but we can't choose what we want to. You know, we can't choose what we want to block and allow. We're just putting all of the data through there. I said, if you guys come up with some kind of an Android or iPad application that updates the dynamic DNS, that would be sweet. And he said he's going to take that to the engineers because he says, I was the first person to ever ask that.
Oh, he's a...
And I thought, seriously?
Maybe nope. Him today. I just Googled it. It's like on. You know, it looks like there are like some third party like solutions. I didn't really get into it, but come on. I mean, why do you need a big stink? I mean, I said the Raspberry Pi because I was just thinking it actually had physical, network port. But you know, it's like if you just need an updater, why can't there be a tablet just sitting somewhere, running plugged into or. Down here in the lab or whatever this thing is I'm in, you know, I could have a decommissioned phone just sitting somewhere with a little app running that was just updating it, you know, periodically. I don't see what the big deal is here.
Right. Oh yeah, no, it's all over the place. There was one program out there, and I can't remember what the name of it is, but it would send your IP address to other places like OpenDNS and to NoIP, and I can't. Oh, it's DNS-O-Matic. That's what it is. And they say that they will. You sign in and choose your services: OpenDNS, NoIP, DynDNS, and then you have their app running, and it sends the IPs to them. But
that's a lot. Yeah, a lot of moving parts there now.
Exactly,
especially with something called O-Matic.
Right. Yeah. DNS-O-Matic.
There usually isn't.
But it has an API, so that's the kick. That's the nice thing, is because it will run on certain platforms. But I'm not a programmer, so it's like, well,
not this week.
Right.
I know how you operate.
Yeah. So that's kind of been my big challenge this week was working on that project.
You know, that just seems like such a common situation in our world that there isn't a common solution. Okay, you know, in this scenario where you got, you know, like here at home, I'm gonna have like a stray user occasionally that needs public Wi-Fi, okay? Or you go to, you got the McDonald's where they have like tens of thousands of locations that are providing free Wi-Fi, and so there's a solution for that. And then somewhere between where you got this guy, I just don't understand why it's like, well, okay, well in each of these situations, this would be the common, you know, the best solution, and where it's, well, maybe there is, I guess it's not like I'm solving that for a living every day, but I just seems like this isn't a new thing. This isn't new. Why couldn't the guy, I just don't understand why the guy at OpenDNS is like, oh yeah, this. What we've seen people comment do is something like this. There, Martin. There, you go with that. Take a look at that. Right. I mean, this is like Wi-Fi. It's everywhere. I mean, I go to the gas station. Boom, Wi-Fi. I have to agree their little thing, and I go. I go up to the courthouse. Wi-Fi. Boom. I agree their little thing. McDonald's, Staples, on. But why? it's you know, we're sitting here talking about this, like.
Right. Another option that somebody said was route all of their, you know, do a VPN and then route all their traffic to one other location and the content filter that. And I'm like, yes, that's a viable solution, but that's killing a mosquito with a shotgun.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, that would work great if I, you know, if I was getting paid tens of thousands of dollars to do content filtering, like that was my only job, but that's not.
Yeah, that feels like, again, a lot of moving pieces.
Oh, so that's a whole, that is a huge mess of moving pieces.
Yeah.
Because what if I go down, then all of their sites go down? Like, you know, oh yeah, Martin Obando is having internet issues, so guess what? We're all having internet issues. Yeah. That's one single giant point of failure.
But yeah, that's that sounds like our tax code. Like just one bad decision on top of another, with more bad decisions fixing unintended consequences, and then it just kind of like a never ending meltdown of that. Well, that's good stuff. I really look forward to hearing what comes of that. And hopefully it's not like just a giant sucking sound of nothingness. Kind of like when you Google a problem, no results.
Right.
That's just, isn't that just the loneliest place in the world?
Yeah. Everything else this week has been, you know, I deployed it. I was, you know, I had a two-hour one-way drive to deploy a laptop, or, you know, a new printer and a new desktop. And I went to a, before that, I got a call from another client, same company that I was deploying the other one out, and he says, I took out my old toner, and my new toner won't go in my printer, and I have no idea why, what's going on. So I bought a new toner, and that one doesn't go in. So I bought another toner, and that one doesn't go in. So could you come and look at what I'm doing?
I said, I can't wait.
So,
I can't wait.
Hold on. Okay. So they're Brother MFC printers, and for those of you who are listening to this, you may have to go back and look at the audio or the video. So they're Brother MFC printers, and so he pulled the whole thing out, he threw it away, grabbed the toner, put it in, it doesn't fit.
Oh, no.
Right, do you know where this is going? So I get there.
Well, you don't throw anything away.
Right, so I get there, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I'm looking in the garbage, and I'm like, where's the drum? Because on the Brother printers, so this is my... Hopefully I don't drop this on my thing. So this is my Brother printer. The whole thing comes out, and what happens is the toner is actually just this piece right here.
Oh, so sad.
This piece comes out, but this drum, right, needs to so it all goes together. And he threw the whole thing away. So the toner sits in the drum, and the whole thing goes back into the printer. And I called him up. He works at another job, and it's kind of part time at this location. And I called him up, and I said, "Well, where's the drum?" He goes, "What drum?" I said, when you open up the tray, there's instructions on how to replace the toner. there's no words. It's all pictures. I said, there's a drum. And he goes, I don't know. I'm like, okay, I think you threw it away. All right. So I call up Staples, or I call the company, and I said, hey, do you have, I call the company, hey, we may need to get a drum. Is that okay? Yeah, it's okay. Good. Okay. Call Office Depot. I said, do you guys have this drum? Because I know there's three in the area of Office Depot, so we're going to go, and I don't want to drive to one and turn around and have to drive the other one. You know what I mean? They're an opposite
direction. Sure, yeah.
So I call him up, and the guy goes, what do you need? I said, I just need this drum. And he goes, okay, hold on. He says, I don't show any in stock. Let me check the other places.
Which should be very easy to get, because if you can get the toner, you should be able to get the drum, because guaranteed a lot of people have done this just not knowing any better.
Right. So he says, we don't have that. Let me go check and see who else has it in the area. Great, not a problem, because I know I have to go out of town, but I have to go into Portland, so I can even swing by in Portland and pick one up and drop it off tonight.
But I want to make one stop, just one
right,
stop.
Right.
Just tell me where it is.
And he goes and he says, you know what? Nobody has them. I said, what do you mean? He goes, oh, yeah, that's been discontinued, and nobody has them. I said, nobody? So I quickly Googled it. Oh, okay. He says, there's nothing I can do to help you. And I didn't call around anywhere else. I just said, okay. I called up the main office, talked to the lady there, and I said, so they've been discontinued. I can go on Amazon, and I can find one right now for $100. Do you want me to order it? She goes, no, hold on. So she calls me back about 5 minutes later. She says, how much should we pay for the printer? I said, it's an older printer. You know, I know we deployed one at, you know, two other sites. I'm deploying one. I have one in the car right now that I'm actually taking down to Eugene. And, you know, I think it was $200 was what the cost of the printer itself cost. And I said, so the drum's going to be
half the cost. That new toner was probably, what, $65, $70 maybe?
Yeah, and he bought three of them. So
Oh, that's great. Okay. All right. Fantastic.
So we so what we ended up doing was she said, okay, don't worry about it. I'm just going to buy it. And she found the one that I had found. It was actually on sale for the weekend. And so it was 114 or something like that. So she saved a huge amount of money on it. So, or 140, whatever. So they bought it. It came in today. I went and deployed it, set it all up at his work and stuff like that. But, so yeah, if you have a Brother printer, the drum comes out with the toner. Please do not throw the drum away, because that costs probably somewhere between 60 and 70% of the whole total cost of the printer is right there in that one drum.
Or if you work somewhere and you want a new printer, throw the whole thing away.
Throw the whole thing away.
And you probably will. Or you could and then have your buddy get the drum out of the dumpster and eBay it.
Right.
So,
and sell it back to you.
Well, no, because they want a new printer.
Right. So, okay.
Yeah. Well, the new printers, they do come with like a starter cartridge of toner. I mean, still, that's kind of the way that.
But the drum is new.
There's not much money, initial investment in the hardware itself. It's all on the back end. So often you find yourself just replacing a unit.
Right. So that was another project I've been working on. I mean, that's all done and resolved, but it was like, oh man.
That doesn't sound like such a big deal, but there was a mystery to solve.
Right.
And there's always a mystery.
Yeah.
Users.
A couple computers that I got to reload for some projects coming up, and you know, nothing too big.
I would ask you, have you ever? I went to make. I had a Dell here today, and it was the guy bought it late last year. He bought a Micro Center. I was surprised it had Windows 7 on. I was expecting 8, but he just dropped it off to just kind of do a couple of things, new computer setup. And I went to burn the disks, and I couldn't find an easy way to make a disk. I didn't get a chance to spend as much time with it as I need to yet. But as I go into Dell Recovery and everything, you know, in Windows, it was wanting like an external drive, like a USB external drive, hard drive, that it was going to back all these things up to. There was no obvious immediate way to make actual like burn restore disks. Does that ring a bell with you guys? Was I missing something?
Say it again.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah, what did you just say, Tim? No way.
This computer, it was a Dell, the laptop, you know, just Dell Inspiron, looked like something just off the shelf, nothing special. And I just wanted to burn the restore disks. And so when I go into the Dell Restore and Backup Center, whatever it's called, where I'd expect to find that operation, you know, there was nowhere that actually said like burn, you know, actual restore the optical disks. It was wanting me to plug in, it was searching for an external drive, like a hard drive on a USB drive.
Are you doing a backup?
Well, that's the thing, is that was the only option I kind of, well, backup was one of them, but it actually said it actually said restore disk, but it was looking for like a hard
was disk it drive. Maybe it was already, it was created once already.
You know, that's a good, there you go. I bet that's it. Because it, don't they do that anymore? They won't let you make one set?
I don't know. It might be. Well, you can do the Windows one too. You know,
yeah, no, I've done a couple.
You can do more than one. Okay. Because I was going to do another one. Well, I was going to do the Windows one after I got it all updated the way I wanted it to, you know, the Windows backup.
Yeah.
Like kind of making like an image of it.
All right. Well, you know what? It's no big deal. I just wanted to throw it out there just to see if that was like, oh, yeah, you know, you just got to go here and look at that. I just, where I went, where I would expect to usually find it, there was no obvious thing, hey, make disk, like I would expect to see. And so,
right.
Depending on how new it is, then you go to the Dell Backup and Recovery. And in one of those mini boxes, there's one, you look around and you just basically want to look for the one that says Factory Restore.
And sometimes there's a key combination to like on boot up to bring it in, you know, to access it.
Yeah, but if it's a Dell, usually Dell only has, you know, F2. F2 is the setup. F12 is the, you know, drop you out to, you know, your prompts to where to boot. And it's like, I know that like HPs and stuff like that, they'll F11 and my Lenovo's will have the restore partition built into it. Mm-hmm. Onto the hard drive, where Dell usually has images and they want you to burn CDs or make them separately. At least that's been my experience. And I mean, over the last many years and I've been deploying, you know, 50 Dell computers, I've never seen it within the new ones will have their little Dell backup and recovery tool that you can use.
No biggie. I'll work it out, but I just throwing it out there, kind of threw me for a loop. And I was busy doing a lot of things with it at the same time, so I may have just overlooked something. New problem. Man, there was some crazy news. Real quickly, hackers steal like $300 million from banks.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, what? And so, yeah, I'm reading through the story, and the numbers all vary greatly, but they're all estimates as to how much these guys got away with. But, you know, basically it was just, you know, hackers. Just, okay, you got hackers here, you got banks over there, you know, probably, they're not saying which banks, but I'm guessing probably all of them. And they just, you know, they were getting a lot of money at once, but I'm like, well, what's the hack? What did they do? The infection? It was all emails. It was all just emails to bank employees, probably higher ups. They were infecting computers, just like, you know. There was nothing here that was worthy of Hollywood making a movie. There was just kind of humdrum everyday stuff. These guys kind of they found the right door to stick the key in, because they made off with all kind of money.
Yeah,
I got one real. Yeah. I got a phony email the other day. And I wanted to open it up, right? It was from FedEx.
I get those. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got down here. I brought it down on my i5 on VirtualBox and just got into one of my Windows images on there. And sure enough, it infected it. Didn't know what it was other than a Trojan. I don't know what it was doing. I mean, it was easy to clean up, but I really didn't research it. But it was definitely a Trojan on there.
Yeah. My sister received one like that, and it was the CryptoLocker.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I mean, does it? Does Malwarebytes tell you what it is, or
it depends on because what it? Well, it depends because most of them are zip files, but they're
this was a zip.
Do you have it so it sees all the extensions?
I do. It was a JavaScript. Actually, it's a JS. So, maybe
but it was probably .js.zip, right?
Something like that, and I mean, it was an executable. It was like 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, it had a bunch of numbers. The name of it was
right. So what happens is Windows, unless you have that flag turned on, Windows just sees the last extension. So you look at it and you say, oh, it's a .zip file, not a problem. And then you actually run it, and you're like, oh wait, no, that's not a .zip file. Or no, I'm sorry, it's a .. Okay, so it'd be file name .zip .js. The JavaScript, because it won't see the .js because you have that turned off. So all you see is the file name, and the file name says .zip. Yeah,
that's really clever. That's sinister. That is so sinister, but deceitfully evil and clever.
Right, because .zip is actually still part of the file name, but the executable is .js, but you don't have that turned on.
So I do.
That's why on all my systems, I go into file, folder options, or preferences, folder options, and there's an extension there that says that's usually turned on. I uncheck it. That is hide I do known it all file extensions.
All my machines. I want to know what it is. That's why.
But they come standard with that already checked. So when you look at it and you think, oh, this is coloringbook.zip, when it's actually coloringbook.zip.exe, and that's how the first CryptoLocker was, you know, my sister got it. It was a .zip file. She was like, oh, that must be something from my payroll. When actually she was double-clicking on a .executable and running it. I mean, there's times when you go, like you said, Tim, that's really sinister and that's evil and sneaky, but at the same time, you're smiling and laughing because you go, that's brilliant.
Oh, it is.
Simply brilliant that it just might work.
Yeah. How many years have I like known that you could turn that on and off on a, it never occurred to me that like you could make it look like a zip, but actually it's not. It's like, wow, somebody actually like thought about that. And then they made it work. It's like, I mean, it makes me smile just in the cleverness of it. It's just, but then I'm not smiling now and I'm angry. So,
well, no, but there's, it's, we can sit back as technicians and look, and did you just get infected? We can sit back in it as technicians and see the beauty in destruction.
I have nothing on this. It's just it's a VM. I don't really have anything on it. I'm seeing if any files are.
That's absolutely right. It's absolutely right. There is an art to the science. And
I did have to deploy a computer to, so it's a, I may have mentioned this last week. I think I did. Anyways, I deployed a Linux laptop to a user who needed something freak. Oh yes, because the fan was broken. It was making that bad sound. So I gave them another laptop that I ran. I can't remember the Linux distro that I put on it, but her big concern was I need it to look familiar. I found the one I was looking for, and it's called Chalet OS, C-H-A-L-E-T-O-S. And it actually is, let me throw the link in here, it actually looks just like Windows 7.
I was going to say Zorin.
I put Zorin on her computer, but this actually, if you go to the screenshots, it looks just like Windows 7.
Really?
It's pretty scary, and this is the one I was trying to think of when I was trying to load up her laptop, because this would have worked out just fine.
And I'm looking at this. I mean, so you said Chalet is the one you were trying to think of, but you did use Zorin.
I did use Zorin. So
Zorin's close enough.
I mean, it is, and I haven't. I tried to touch bases with her and talk to her on Sunday when I saw her, but I didn't get a chance to. So, but this is the one I was actually trying to think of. So, I did download the 32-bit version. I'm going to throw it in a VM just to take a look at it.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
Still, it's
different enough.
I don't see where that looks that much. Nah. I would say where it looks that much more like Windows than Zorin does. But once again, I mean, you know, I think that a hardcore Linux user that would be like, well, why would you want to do that? But those people are so far gone. They completely miss the value, I think, in a user that it's just like they don't understand anything but Windows. And so when you give them something that looks like Windows and they still use it, but it's Linux, I mean, this is the gateway drug, people. I mean, this is a good thing. So
right. I mean, because my documents still goes in my documents, music still goes in my music. I mean, it all is in the same folder structure. It just looks, they're trying to make it look like that. And really, like you said, they're trying to make it so you can give it to a user who has never had Linux and they go, oh, I can still get around this. This looks familiar. Yeah, it's not a start button. It's not a start menu. It's not the little thing. It actually says Chalet OS, and I'm assuming you probably can change that. But when you click on it, you get the two rows, you know, you get the shortcuts.
I mean,
it's close. I mean, it's 95% close.
Well, you know what? Windows didn't have start button anymore. It has start orb.
Right.
For some reason, you know, which, you know, now I have to go through that with users. Well, now I click start button. Well, I'll see start. Well, where the start button was. Well, it's called start orb. A what? Orb. ORB. What? Let's see the round. Most they just click, crying out loud. Yeah, it's like,
what? Yeah. Where have you been clicking for the last 25, you know, for the last 15 years? Click there.
Here's what I want you to do. I want you to don't think about it. I want you to click start button. Don't think about it. Just do it. Okay, well, I can do that. So just muscle memory takes them to the corner. But the thing is that, you know, it's especially with Windows 8, it's like you want a new computer, and so here, well, how about if I give you this? We can argue if this looks like Windows or not. It looks a lot more like Windows than Windows now. This is something people can use.
Hey,
I know this.
Hey, Martin, I have the name of that Trojan that was on that. I lost everybody. Everybody's locked up on me.
You lost everybody?
Oh, you're back. You're back. Tim's not.
I'm back.
But the connection is really.
No, I'm here. I just see a lot of crazy stuff happens over there.
Mitch infected his VM live on the show.
No, I did it last week. I cleaned it up, and I got the record from Malwarebytes. It's Trojan EDVBGen. 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 I never looked it up. I never researched it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the executable, it was just numbers. 6561-89354.
But your computer never gave you the, you know, it never popped up with any kind of ransomware.
No. I saw it. I mean, I installed it. Of course, didn't do anything. VM? What's that?
Is that VM have internet access?
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I installed it, and I could immediately, nothing happened. I mean, I clicked on it, but I could feel it, this machine was sluggish, and then, you know, with 100%. And I saw that thing running, and, you know, I killed it. But, you know, definitely that number was associated with it. And I cleaned it up, but you know, nothing popped up. Everything, it's running good. Nothing seems, you know, like it's wrong with
it
right now. So I don't quite think it was that. I was just curious. And I didn't do any research on it, but I can now, actually.
But it was good to start up in a VM.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious. Actually, I got it in my Comcast email, and I forwarded it to my Gmail. So for one reason was to see if they would catch it and block it, but they didn't catch it either. Because I give my buddy hell for using Comcast over Gmail. Because Gmail is pretty good there. They do catch a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot of stuff that does go in spam.
So. You know, right there in the email, I think that is that's a good opportunity for those providers that if file extensions are turned off and you're going to download something, that does seem like a good opportunity and an easy thing for them to do is say, hey, before we do this, it's the full file extension is this. Are you sure you want to do this? Mm-hmm. I think that would, I think that in the case of Martin's sister, I think that would have at least made her pause and stop and think, hey, this isn't a dot zip. It's a dot, you know, something, this doesn't look right. I'm going to hold off for a second. What do you think, Mitch? Would I think it'd be something easy for Gmail or something to do before you download something?
Good question.
I don't know.
It just seems like I do get a lot of stuff does go into a spam. Suspicious. Well, I'll get a good amount of stuff that's not bad that does get in spam too. I just think it's better than a Comcast. That's just me. No reason, but I just love Gmail where other people hate it. But
I don't have an opinion one way or another about it. I think it seems to work fine.
Is that your main email? I mean, I have a Comcast. You know what? I have Yahoo. I don't use anymore.
I can't honestly claim any email as my main email because I hate email. I just...
You hate email. You don't answer it.
I've tried to cut as much email out of my life as possible. And so
really?
I don't... Yeah.
Even for customers or would-be customers? All right. I don't know. I keep on losing Martin and Tim, and I'm not sure what's going on. Don't know if it's my end. Certainly hope it's not. Let's hold on, see what's going on. I completely lost them. All right, we're back.
I'm back.
Hey, what is going on?
Hey.
What is going on? Is it you or is it me?
No, I don't know. The whole thing just dropped. So, okay. Right. Well,
meh. So anyway, I just in conclusion, that's how I go about winning the lottery every month.
And they missed it.
Well, did they?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We'll have to hit that next time.
Yeah. Oh my.
Well, cool. Well, Tim, do you have anything in your?
Nope, not today.
Not today, huh?
Nope, not today. It's too cold.
Yeah. And I don't understand. So I would say I could, but I don't.
Yeah. Look, it's in my contract. I'm allowed one non-secular type answer in this show. And everybody has to go along with it.
Very nice. Very nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, cool, guys.
Negotiations.
We're a little early this week because it's a Monday. It's a holiday. We'll get this out earlier. I apologize to anybody who's here in the future and is missing us.
I apologize to everybody in the future. You're just going to be older.
Yeah. I understand. All right. Well, guys, Mitch, if people want to get a hold of us, what's the best way they can do that?
Well, geeksters@podnuts.com and send us voicemails at 707-6-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688.
Yes. Nice. That's Tim, if people want to get a hold of you, send you some, figure out how to win the lottery.
Yeah, I'm Tim Bauermeister on the G+. And everybody knows the only way to win the lottery is don't play.
There you go.
And I'm Martin Obando. You can get me at Martin at Obando Computing. I am M Obando in the G+, Obando Computing in the chat. I'm all around. I'm everywhere and nowhere. I'm like the shadow. No, I'm too big for a shadow. Never mind. I'm like Chris Farley. No, never mind.
Shadows can be big. I'm confused. Anyway.
I guess they can.
Yeah.
All right. Guys, thanks for hanging out with us again on another Geeksters. Hey, next episode is 150.
Is it really?
Yeah, we should have a party.
150, okay.
All right. Yeah. I think every show is a party with you guys.
I have to agree. It's my party. I'll cry if I want to.
Don't cry. Oh, not where you're at. It's too cold.
It'll freeze halfway down my beard.
For real.
Oh, man.
It's even cold enough to freeze salt water. All right, guys. Have a great fiscal week, and don't forget to be grundled. Bye.